Up front next, Trump wants everyday regular people, voters, to help him pay $500 million in the next few days. Meanwhile, Trump Org is reportedly building new property in Florida that would cost millions of dollars. So is Trump really out of cash? Plus, a motion to impeach Biden today rejected by Republicans. Why? Well, they don't have the votes. The Biden impeachment investigation losing more steam tonight. And Oprah Winfrey speaking for the first time tonight about her dramatic weight loss to Gayle King and Charles Barkley. And you will get the first preview here this hour. Let's go out front. And good evening, I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, Trump turning to voters, asking them to pay his bond, his $464 million bond. He says that it's unfair, so he wants other people, regular Americans, to foot the bill. A whole new definition of other people's money. Sending this text message, quote, keep your filthy hands off Trump Tower. Democrats want to seize my properties. And then you see there the link to donate money. Now, Trump says he does not have enough money to finance the $464 million bond, and the clock is ticking. He has just 5 days to come up with the money, or the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, is threatening to seize some of his most beloved properties. But James tonight making it clear, she says that Trump does have the money. He just doesn't want to fork it over. In a filing tonight, James writes, quote, if Trump were truly unable to secure the bond, quote, they at minimum should have consented to have their real estate interests held by the Supreme Court to satisfy the judgment. Now, Trump has refused to do this. In fact, what he has said is that the best he can do is $100 million of the $464 million required, which is why this story today caught our attention in the Palm Beach Post. They report that Eric Trump said in a statement today, quote, we look forward to adding this beautiful building to our already amazing property and club, Trump National Golf Club, Jupiter. Now, Trump is referring to plans to build a new office complex at the Trump National in Jupiter. And according to the Palm Beach Post, the price tag on this building would be $12 to $15 million. Now, if that really is the case, this one example just serves to raise the very real questions that are out there. Because Trump cannot say he does not have any more money if there's $15 million here and $15 million there and who's now how much how over there. You get the point. Maybe he's just hoping that nobody looks too hard, that the web of complexity of his businesses is just too opaque to see through. Because maybe he just wants people to see only the buildings that he is refusing to put on the line, the ones that made him a brand to America in the open of The Apprentice, the ones that define not just his net worth, but his self-worth. And that is why the very thought that New York could seize Trump's properties is deeply personal to him. I mean, just listen to this. It goes all the way back when we talk about net worth and self-worth. Here is Trump with Connie Chung in an interview in 1990.
When I buy the Plaza Hotel, to me, that's exciting because it's a trophy. It's a total trophy. When I build Trump Tower or when I build the Taj Mahal.
Yeah, but which you know, it sounds like baubles. You
no, but it's exciting. And part of the reason it's exciting is because they're mega deals. They're important deals. They're glamorous deals. Everybody talks about them. Everybody reads about them and writes about them. There's a level of importance there that I think also somewhat turns me on.
Well, there is one asset above all, though, that may matter to him even now more than any other.
My thing would be Trump Tower next to Tiffany. That really is the building that... that's very special.
Even though Grand Hyatt was the first.
Well, Grand Hyatt was the first, but that I wasn't married to it. I got a price that was a good deal for me and a good deal for Hyatt. They were really happy to get it. But
no emotional ties.
There was no real emotional ties. A little bit. Trump Tower would be the thing I'm really married to in terms of real estate.
And so this might be one divorce that Trump is not willing to go ahead with. Kara Scannell is out front live outside Trump Tower. And Kara, the attorney general is not letting up on Trump here as these hours and days tick away. And she is telling him to find the money.
Yeah, Erin, that's right. I mean, she's telling the appeals court not to even take into consideration Trump's filing on Monday, where he said that they have tried to get a bond from 30 different insurance underwriters, none of them willing to underwrite and secure the bond backed by property. And she's saying that the appeals court shouldn't give that any credence. They're saying that Trump doesn't even detail what efforts they made to get the bond, what kind of terms the underwriters were offering, what properties Trump offered to put up as collateral. That was one of the points they pushed back on. I mean, another point is she was, you know, even taking a swipe at Trump and saying that maybe one of the issues is that the properties are just not worth what he believes that they are. That, of course, was the entire point of the trial, that the judge had found that Trump did inflate the value of his properties. I mean, the AG's office also suggesting that maybe there could be a pooling of underwriters that all come together and put up the $500 million. Trump's team has said that that was not feasible. They are pushing back tonight, and in a statement, their attorney Chris Kice says the attorney general's latest filing demonstrates her continued willingness to misrepresent the facts and misconstrue applicable law in her political crusade against President Trump. Today's missive does not even bother to cite New York case law. Now, this is ultimately up to the New York appeals court. They have now heard from the attorney general's office. They've heard from Trump, and they may even hear more from Trump as the clock is ticking here. Now, Trump has asked them to be permitted to put up a smaller dollar amount than the $500 million, or not require them to put up any money until this whole appeal is over. The AG's office opposes that. And as you say, Trump has 5 days to come up with the cash, or the New York Attorney General's office, if the appeals court doesn't rule, could move forward and try to seize some of his assets. And Trump's family has called these assets Mona Lisas. Aaron?
Mona Lisa's. All right. Thank you very much, Kara. And should point out, of course, that in New York law, as it would apply to anybody else, would require them to put the money up. So not having to put it up just because it's a large amount would go against precedent and the experience of anybody else who owes it. All right. Outfront now, Ryan Goodman, our Outfront legal analyst. Also, Stephanie Grisham, the former White House press secretary for then President Trump, and Jonathan Greenberg, investigative journalist who has covered Trump and his finances for decades. He says that Trump did not tell him the truth when he worked at Forbes about his wealth in an effort to get on the Forbes list of wealthiest Americans. Ryan, let me start with you. So just the very basics here. Trump says he's got $100 million. And by the way, he had has pledged as much to E. Jean Carroll in that case. So that would mean a couple $100 million at least have been put forward. Says he doesn't have the remainder. But you've read through the filing from the New York Attorney General today when she says, well, you could have gotten backing from insurance companies for little pieces of it as opposed to the whole thing. You could have had assets be held by the Supreme Court. Is she correct in her points?
Basically, yes. So she's correct in the sense of there are other options he could have gone with, which is to put some of his property in a receivership that the Supreme Court would then have control over. That would have even been smart in some sense, because then at least he chooses the properties. She doesn't choose the properties, so she might go after the Mona Lisas and the like. So those are options he had. He had other options of trying to at least get, you know, closer to the $450 million with insurance companies by accumulating it through different companies. But he hasn't seemed to do that at all. So there are other ways in which this is just doesn't make sense. And there's another one as well, which is that he should have probably prepared to lose the case. And if he prepared to lose the case, then he would have actually thought well ahead before any kind of fireside sale.
All right. So when you say, you know, a fire sale, that is the situation that he is in right now, if indeed the option is to sell a property. Jonathan, and this is exactly what you've looked at. You finished an in-depth analysis of Trump properties here in New York, those Mona Lisas as they refer to them. And I just want to show everybody the math that you did. This is the fire sale value. So you're knocking 20 to 40% off the value of each of these buildings to get to the value on the screen. Seven of these properties here in New York, that gets you just actually to right about the $464 million that he would need. The point that you're making here is that you got to add all of them together to even get there. Now, he has said that he has $100 million separately. But, Jonathan, how quickly could such a sale happen? You're looking at a lot of properties in 5 days.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think he could raise this money. This is the game plan for Letitia James when she seizes the properties, to really seize the properties that are the most valuable and the least complicated in terms of moving to a quick sale, which would be probably about 60 days she could sell these, especially if she cuts him out of the deal, as I propose, and deals directly to his partners in the three commercial real estate properties, and then goes directly to sell the apartments and the condominiums, including Trump Tower, for their real market value at a reasonable discount of 20%. I've discounted the commercial properties by 40% from what Forbes had estimated a year ago, based on the fact that commercial properties property is not exactly a hot commodity. Interest rates are up and rents are really down. So I'm assuming and that Trump probably lied about his cash flow when Forbes reported that a year ago. So basically, it takes a lot of properties. This is 90% of his New York real estate holdings. It's his seven largest holdings. And it's a game plan for Letitia James to act without Trump, to cut him out of the deal and just focus on getting the money for New York State and put him on the defensive for the first time instead of the offensive.
I'm having, not even laughing, but having flashbacks to when all my properties were mortgaged on the board of Monopoly and how badly that felt. All right, so there's another thing that could come into play here, and that's bankruptcy. And Stephanie and Ryan, I want to ask you about that. First, Ryan, in a debate, Hillary Clinton had said Trump declared bankruptcy six times. Washington Post fact checker found that to be true. So this is something he has had no problem doing in the past. And in fact, I don't know what bankruptcy really means when you still get to live the life that he continued to live even when, quote unquote, bankrupt. So I want to ask Stephanie about this now because it's psychological and emotional as well. But could he do this by Monday? And would it make sense?
There's a world in which it makes sense that if he declares bankruptcy, there's an automatic stay on the ability of Tish James to enforce the judgment. At the same time, it doesn't make sense long term. She would still, in the end, be able to claim the judgment because at the end of the day,
the properties are there.
The properties are there, and these kinds of properties, because of the judgment and because the ruling is about fraud and because it's owed to a governmental entity, you can't actually, the word is discharge. You can't discharge those debts through bankruptcy. So he wouldn't be able to actually get out of those particular debts.
Yeah.
But at least it puts a stay on very quickly. So that would be one idea for him. Though, of course, there could be other costs to him politically and otherwise.
And Stephanie, that's what I want to ask you about, right? I mean, he has built his entire his candidacy, his political career about being this billionaire, successful businessman. So yes, as part of that, there were six bankruptcies. But that is something that who knows how many Americans really know that or think that. You don't generally associate bankruptcy with success. So do you think he would be willing to take that route this time, at this time in the election?
I do. I think that rather than lose Trump Tower, Mar-a-Lago, or Bedminster, those top three for sure, he would declare bankruptcy. And it's because exactly what you said, he's done it before, but also he will lean into it. Personally, privately, will he like it? No, he'll hate it, but he'll lean into it and say, this is what I was forced to do. Mm. This is because of the left wing. This is because of the New York liberals. They're doing this to me. This is just a business move to protect myself. I can hear it now. He won't like it personally, but I can absolutely see him doing that. And then, you know, Ryan could probably speak to this more, but once he becomes president, I don't know what kinds of things he would have. I'm sure there would be people who would then suddenly be willing to bail him out of his bankruptcy. So I'm not sure how that would work, but I think anything to stall it and anything to keep those properties, he'll do.
Jonathan, are you hearing anything about interest swirling about any of these properties? I mean, in terms of buyers, do people really take it seriously and think that they're going to be available?
I think it depends who's selling. I don't think people are going to buy this properties out of bankruptcy from Donald Trump. However, I just want to say that the appeal is dead on Monday if the bond is not posted. And the bond is unlikely to be posted, which means the bankruptcy, it will only give him so much protection against the state. Letitia James could, you know, will continue to seize the assets. They will be sold. They'll probably be sold well before the next, you know, the election when he would come in. And the bankruptcy that I'm thinking about is that Letitia James will also immediately seize all his operating capital accounts. That happens day one.
Yeah.
And once that happens, he doesn't have operating accounts for his other banks, and a number of cascading dominoes may fall. So in addition to these properties I've put, I believe Trump is facing bankruptcy even without declaring bankruptcy based upon the cash calls that are likely to come from his other properties, a number of which are heavily indebted outside of New York State, that are going to come cascading down, you know, come Monday should Letitia James seize his accounts and do what anyone else would have done to them, you know, in terms of a judgment.
So, Stephanie, what is the emotional and psychological part of this, of course, is hugely significant. I mean, you know, we just played those clips on purpose. You know, but Connie Chung in 1990, he's talking about his feelings again with Larry King. Right? If there's anything that defines the core of him, of his inner self, It's this. It's these properties. It's what he built. So what does this moment actually mean to him?
You know, look, I can't imagine behind the scenes what he's doing. And for that matter, what Melania or the family, most notably Eric and Don Jr. are doing. But it's absolutely crushing him. And I can only imagine the yelling and the throwing of things, the things I've seen so many times. It's I'm sure killing him. And of course, though, he's going to always say he's going to blame everybody else. I know they put out some kind of a fundraising email today saying, keep their grubby hands off Trump Tower. So while inwardly, there's no way this isn't absolutely crushing him, you know, psychologically, outwardly, he's just going to continue to play the victim.
All right. Thank you all very much. And next, the Biden impeachment bust, the investigation going nowhere tonight. Republicans today, wait till you see what happened on the inside of this hearing. One of the witnesses testifying for impeachment actually testified from jail, plus a migrant who illegally entered the United States, has been living in the United States for 25 years. And guess what? This person says Trump should stop calling them rapists, but he would vote for him if he could. And a CNN special investigation tonight, a growing movement in Israel to resettle Gaza in Gaza once the war is over.
We Jews will be in Gaza.
That sounds like ethnic cleansing.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support. Your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
New tonight at Kabuki Theater, an invitation to Biden to testify on Capitol Hill. The House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer says he wants Biden to testify during his own impeachment investigation. It comes as Democrats on Capitol Hill today called Comer's bluff. Congressman Jared Moskowitz today calling for a vote to impeach Biden. Well, that's exactly what Republicans want, right?
I just think we should do it today. Let's just call for it. I'll make the motion, Mr. Chairman. I want to help you out. You can second it. Right? Like, make the motion to impeach President Biden. Go ahead. It's your turn. You second it. No, nothing. Okay, we got nothing. So I want to, with my last couple minutes, show the American people that they're never going to impeach Joe Biden. It's never going to happen because they don't have the evidence.
There were crickets on that. I mean, Republicans Jim Jordan and James Comer, who are leading the impeachment inquiry into Biden, refused to second that motion during a hearing today. Now, just on the face of it, of course, the reality is it shows something important. Comer, Jordan, they do not have the votes. And that is because the Republicans leading this effort have not delivered the goods. In fact, today in this hearing, what they've delivered is a very questionable cast of characters. People like Jason Galanis, who claims to be a Hunter Biden associate, who actually testified from behind bars today.
I want to remind people, he's sitting in prison. That's why he can't be here today. He's sitting in prison for scamming workers' pensions. I mean, how low can you get?
And there was also Tony Bobulinski. another former Biden family business associate. Now, he has been telling everyone that Joe Biden was deeply involved in his son's overseas business deals. Those claims, however, are not only uncorroborated, but actually have been undercut by other key witnesses. And keep in mind, Bobulinski is a guy who also has questionable ties to an unsavory Russian billionaire, a close ally of Putin's for decades, an oligarch who has been charged in the United States with violating sanctions, international money laundering, and conspiracy. And Bobulinski is not the only star Republican witness who has ties to Russia. In fact, this has been clear all over the investigation. You may remember Alexander Smirnov, the Republican star source for information on the Biden family. Well, he also happens to be in prison right now for lying to the FBI about the Biden family's dealings in Ukraine. And he told the FBI that he got this false information from Russian intelligence officials. These are the people that Republicans have been relying on for their investigation, an investigation that, at least up until this point, has proven to be a waste of taxpayer money. And many Republicans are well aware of this. That is why they do not have the votes and couldn't second the call to actually impeach Biden, even if that wasn't theater as well. Manu Raju is out front on Capitol Hill tonight. And Manu, another Biden impeachment hearing, lots of speculation and accusation, but it didn't appear to be any real evidence.
Yeah, it didn't really move the dial either. In fact, I spent the day talking to a lot of Republicans who simply say that they are still waiting to see whether there is enough evidence that they would actually support an article of impeachment against the president. Right now, a lot of them said there's a high bar. That's what one congressman, Mike Gallagher, told me earlier today. And, of course, there's little margin for error for the Speaker of the House to move forward on an article of impeachment against Joe Biden. He can only afford to lose two Republican votes on any party line vote. And right now, there are far more than two who would vote against this effort. But the question is, what do Republicans do who are leading this probe? Do they pull the plug? Do they move ahead? Or do they decide to continue this investigation and keep a cloud over Joe Biden? I put that question directly to James Jordan, who runs this committee, the House Judiciary Committee, as well as other members who sit on the panel as well. They say, let's keep investigating.
Well, the Constitution doesn't put a limit on how much time it takes to do your duty of oversight of the executive branch. So we're going to do our duty. I've always been driven by the facts. I think there's a compelling case there, but I've never said what we should do in the end. We're just really going to keep doing our work, and then the conference will make a decision. That's how the process works.
You don't see a conclusion to this, it sounds like.
Well, I think we still need to continue with our investigation before we have a vote. I think a vote would be premature.
So she says a vote would be premature. This investigation, of course, has been going on for many months, really since September, since the former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, announced this probe. But that's a real challenge that Republicans face at the moment. If they go forward with an article of impeachment vote, it will fail. If they continue on this probe, the question is, why are they continuing this, as they have not been able to prove Joe Biden has taken any corrupt action, any official action to help his son or profited from his son's business dealings? So as you're seeing from Republicans, though, if they vote to acquit him, essentially that would absolve Joe Biden in the middle of an election year. So some of them say, let's just keep investigating.
I guess that's why the announcement of an intention to invite the president to testify. All right. Thank you very much, Manu. I want to go now to the Democratic Congressman Roger Krishnamoorthy of Illinois, because he's a member of the Oversight Committee, which held the Biden impeachment hearing today. So, Congressman, you were there in the room. Did you learn anything new from any of the witnesses today?
No, not at all. It was a circus and it was a waste of time. We should be working on other things aside from this. But unfortunately, this saga continues. And I think the same results came out of it, which was it was a nothing burger again.
So the Republican chairman of the Oversight Committee, James Comer, as I mentioned, he maintains that the president is either complicit or incompetent about his family's business dealings. But he wouldn't move ahead with impeachment. Now, why do you think that is at its heart?
There's no evidence that would suggest impeachable crimes. Their star witness in their first impeachment hearing, Jonathan Turley, who's an expert witness, said there was no evidence of impeachment.
Right.
Various colleagues have said the same thing. And today, if he were to move forward with that, he wouldn't have the votes on the floor.
So I want to ask you one thing, though, and this is at the heart of why they've continued down this path at some level. And that is how the American public sees this. But Hunter Biden's former business partner, And this individual, his testimony has not yet been disputed. He has said that Joe Biden was put on speakerphone around 20 times during Hunter's meeting with business partners. And he did say that those conversations could have been about the weather or whatever it might be. But nonetheless, obviously a really important person to put on the call, right, when you're trying to get business. He said that Biden attended dinners with his son Hunter and foreign business associates of Hunter's. But he does say nothing of importance was discussed at those times. Again, though, talking about the importance of the meetings. And that is why maybe 68% of Americans think President Biden did act either illegally or unethically in Hunter Biden's business dealings. Now, that's an Associated Press poll from October. Don't have anything more recent, but that's the latest that we do have on this. And it raises the question, Congressman, as to whether you are concerned that there was anything like that and that the damage to President Biden politically is serious.
No. Here's why. Because unfortunately for the Republicans, they haven't been able to show evidence of impeachable conduct. He might have been on a speakerphone. He never took any official action to help his son in any of those business dealings. And one of the most interesting things was this line of questioning that I had with Lev Parnas, who was sent to Ukraine to try to dig dirt on the Bidens to harm him during the presidential campaign. And Lev Parnas said he found zero evidence of any criminality in all of his travels to Ukraine. And basically, the only person who was willing to come forward with dirt turned out to be a Russian asset. That's Alexander Smirnov, whom you referred to before. And so we're kind of in this situation where the Republicans are not able to produce any evidence of impeachable conduct. And the evidence that they have is suspect, to say the least.
All right, Congressman, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And next, the Texas governor tonight ordering police to arrest migrants for criminal trespass. Yet you're going to hear in a moment from a migrant here in the United States who says he would back Trump if he could. And he'll tell you why. And Oprah Winfrey speaking right now to Gayle King and Charles Barkley about her weight loss. We will have the first preview from their interview coming up. Tonight, Texas Governor Greg Abbott taking matters into his own hands, allowing Texas State Police to arrest migrants for, quote, criminal trespass. As any moment now, a court is expected to rule on whether his state is breaking the law. And this is a crucial ruling. It could have massive implications across the United States. President Biden is in Texas tonight, is expected to speak shortly. And Rosa Flores is out front near the southern border. And now you're going to hear her speaking to a migrant who slams the Republicans for villainizing people like him, but says that he would vote for Trump if he could.
Yo soy un inmigrante indocumentado.
Gelacio Velasquez is an undocumented immigrant who has lived in Houston for 25 years.
Si yo pudiera votar en este momento, votaría por Donald Trump. Él es nacionalista y quiere que este país esté bien. Aquí nacieron mis hijos y quiero que mis hijos estén bien.
¿Y por qué más? Why else?
No votaría por Joe Biden por este motivo. Joe Biden tiene al país hecho un desastre económicamente.
What would you tell Democrats who think that all immigrants are going to be on their side?
Dejen de pensar que los inmigrantes somos ignorantes. Los demócratas son la monja bondadosa que te encuentras en la calle, que te dice que te va a ayudar, pero cuando tiene el poder para hacerlo, se le olvida la promesa que te hizo.
¿Y para los republicanos, for Republicans?
Los republicanos nos utilizan como la piñata electoral. Ellos tienen la culpa de todos. Son los culpables de las violaciones, son los culpables del consumo de drogas. Pero es una gran mentira.
Velasquez says one of the measures used by Texas Republicans to terrorize the undocumented community is SB 4, the Texas immigration law that's in legal limbo.
You see somebody crossing the river, automatically you know that he's violating that law.
Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court allowed the law to go into effect after a district court previously blocked it. Hours later, an appeals court blocked it again, causing confusion across the state.
I think even legal experts are calling this judicial whiplash.
Today, more whiplash as the appeals court hears oral arguments and Texas Governor Greg Abbott is vowing to enforce the laws already in the books.
Even without SB 4, Texas has the legal authority to arrest people coming across the razor wire barriers on our border.
One Texas sheriff says the situation makes it difficult to implement the law and puts an undue burden on local communities.
This could put us in a situation where we could see jail closures because we would be at capacity.
Despite Velasquez's criticism of Republicans and their use of anti-immigrant rhetoric,
he says he wants Donald Trump to win. ¿Por qué quiere que gane Donald Trump? Why?
Él es racista y claro que no me gusta que sea racista y claro que no me gusta la retórica antimigrante de Donald Trump, pero finalmente al final es pura politiquería.
Algunos me van a juzgar, oye, es que tú quieres que gane Donald Trump, pues es que es nacionalista, por eso quiero que gane y los nacionalistas aman a su país.
Well, so that's just so incredibly powerful. I mean, he's saying, calling immigrants rapists and using drugs is a great lie, that Trump's a racist, and yet he wants him to win because he's a nationalist and nationalists love their country. I mean, what an incredible conversation.
You know, and one of the things that really stood out, Aaron, is I asked him specifically about Trump's plan to put undocumented immigrants like him in camps and deport them back to their home countries. And he said that he would still support Trump because he doesn't believe that Trump would actually act on that anti-immigrant rhetoric. He says that that plan would be inhumane and illogical and that Trump would not act on that. And Aaron, he had one other piece of advice for Republicans. He said if Republicans would stop using anti-immigrant rhetoric, they would secure more of the Hispanic vote. Aaron?
All right, Rosa, thank you very much. Just amazing reporting. Thank you. And next, a special investigation out front. We're going to take you inside the Israeli movement to resettle Israelis in Gaza once the war is over.
I think of the people who live here, but also the people who live in Gaza. What happens to them in this vision of this new settlement?
And Oprah Winfrey tonight opening up about dieting and her use of weight loss drugs. That interview with Gayle King and Charles Barkley just wrapping up, and we'll share with you the first clip.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. Join me, Philip Nguyen, a scholar of Vietnamese-American culture, and the cast and crew as we discuss the making of this historic series. Subscribe now to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts and stream HBO's The Sympathizer starting April 14th exclusively on Max.
Tonight, new video into OutFront. This is of an Israeli drone strike in the West Bank. At least three people were killed, one seriously injured. This is according to the Palestinian Red Crescent Society. The IDF says that it hit what they call terrorist operatives inside a car. Now, this comes as a new CNN investigation reveals just how much traction the push for Israeli settlements, not in the West Bank, now in Gaza, is getting. Our Clarissa Ward speaking to a woman at the center of this movement. An idea that frankly was seen as incredibly extreme to most Israelis, the vast majority of Israelis, before the October 7th attacks. Now, though, she says she's hearing from hundreds of families interested in living in a new Israeli, quote, Riviera in Gaza after the war. Clarissa Ward is out front with this special report.
High in the hills of the occupied West Bank, a flag flies in the face of a Palestinian village. God is king, it says. Two young settlers guard this illegal outpost. Construction hasn't even begun, but we are not welcome.
So they're asking us to leave. They don't want to talk to us. They said they've been here for about 9 months.
Dotted across the landscape, more signs of the fight to assert Israeli control over Palestinian land. The Arabic names on signposts crudely erased. Under international law, the Beit Hagla settlement is illegal, but last February, the Israeli government officially recognized it along with eight others, a move the U.S. strongly opposed. We're here because God promised us this land, Azriel Picar tells us. Now these settlers have set their sights on a new prize, one that seemed utterly impossible before October 7th. Returning to Gaza, they cheer. That is the goal of Zionist settler organization Nahala. one of more than a dozen groups now advocating for the reestablishment of Israeli settlements in Gaza. A recent promotional video even boasts that Gaza will become the next Riviera. Daniela Weiss is the godmother of the movement. She's already started recruiting from the 700,000 strong settler community of Israel.
We're just arriving now at a settlement in the occupied West Bank, and we're heading to a talk that Daniela Weiss is giving to a group of people who are potentially interested in resettling Gaza.
We are for the land of Israel and Ben-Gvir, she says. About 20 people gather in the living room of a family home. Weiss knows that for many in this community, there is deep nostalgia for Gush Katif, a block of 21 Israeli settlements that were forcibly evacuated by the IDF in 2005 when Israel left the Gaza Strip. This is the vision of Gaza, she says. You see all the nucleus groups. A map has already been drawn up, with six groups laying claim to different parts of the enclave.
So they've just been handing out these little booklets that say, People of Israel, return home, and then underneath, a call to return to the settlements of Gaza.
One of the organizers tells the group they have a representative flying to Florida to raise money. Nachala gets support from a number of groups in the U.S., including AFSI, Americans for a Safe Israel, which co-sponsored a recent webinar on the return to Gush Katif, even as the Biden administration has cracked down on settlements in the West Bank.
There is a very strong support from very prominent, from very, I would say, wealthy people, wealthy Jews.
In the U.S.?
In the U.S.
Can you name any names?
No, I cannot. No.
Back at her home in Kedumim settlement, Weiss tells us she's already enrolled 500 families.
I even have on my cell phone names of people who say, to enlist me, enroll me, I want to join. I want to join the groups that are going to settle Gaza.
I have to ask you, though, because we're sitting here talking and we're listening to the call
I'm
to prayer.
I hope you are listening to
which
it.
Which is a reminder, I think, of the people who live here, but also the people who live in Gaza. What happens to them in this vision of this new settlement with Jewish settlers even in Gaza City?
What I think about Gaza, the Arabs of Gaza lost the right to be in Gaza on the 7th of October. Yes, I do hear the mosque. I do hear the prayer. Things were different until the 7th of October. No Arab, I'm speaking about more than 2 million Arabs. They will not stay there. We, Jews, will be in Gaza.
That sounds like ethnic cleansing.
The Arabs want to annihilate the state of Israel. So you can call them monsters. You can call them cleansing of Jews. We are not doing to them. They are doing to us. I couldn't make it clearer when I said that myself, as a person who is preoccupied with settling the land, until the 7th of October, I didn't have plans of returning to Gaza. It's clear. I'm not interested in cleansing.
What is clear is that Weiss's views, traditionally seen as extreme in Israel, have become more popular since October 7th. In late January, jubilant crowds packed an auditorium in Jerusalem for the Victory of Israel conference, calling for the resettlement of Gaza. A poll that month from the Jewish People Policy Institute found that 26% of Israelis advocate the reconstruction of the Gush Katif settlements after the war is over. Among supporters of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's right-wing coalition government, that number jumps to 51%. Several ministers were present at the conference, including far-right Heritage Minister Amichai Eliyahu. In a rare interview with Western media, he tells us his political decisions are guided by the Torah.
Is there anything about Gush Katif in here?
Yes. Yes.
and that settlements in Gaza are needed to prevent another October 7th.
The language of the land says that wherever there is a Jewish settlement, there will be more security. Doesn't mean there will be absolute security, but there will be more security.
Why would you advocate for something that many would say is illegal, is immoral, is not supported by the majority of Israelis, and is also very harmful to Israel in terms of its international standing?
Why do you think it's immoral to take land from someone who wants to kill me? Why is it immoral to take my land, which my ancestors live there, which I've even given up, to someone who slaughters, rapes, and murders me? What is more immoral than that?
Netanyahu has called resettling Gaza, quote, an unrealistic goal, and most Israelis agree. But that hasn't stopped scores of IDF soldiers fighting there from posting videos calling for a return to Gush Katif. For many supporters of the settler movement, what was once a distant fantasy is now a fervent dream.
Now, Aaron, we also spent some time in Tel Aviv. We went to a large anti-government protest, the largest, in fact, since October 7th. And certainly nobody there, to give you some perspective, was talking about reestablishing Gush Katif or reestablishing any kind of settlements inside Gaza. But we talked to one woman who's a professor, and what she said, I think, was really interesting. She said, listen, they are a minority, these extreme right-wing settler types, but they are politically a very powerful minority at the moment because they have such strong representation in Benjamin Netanyahu's coalition government. She also said, which I think is relevant too, this idea that their ideas, which were traditionally seen as fringe, now have a lot more traction because in the aftermath of October 7th, you do see a hardening of views in Israel. You do see a shift to the right, just as you do in many other countries after a massive attack like that. Certainly, you saw something similar after 9/11 in the U.S., Aaron.
All right, Clarissa, thank you very much. Just incredible to see that and to hear what they have to say. Out front next, Oprah Winfrey just speaking to Gayle King and Charles Barkley about her weight loss struggles and how a weight loss medication has changed her life. It's a story everyone has been wanting to hear, and we have the first clip from their interview next.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.